1. Now when the wall was rebuilt, and I set up the doors, and the gatekeepers, and the singers, and Levites were appointed, then I put Hananiah, my brother, and Hananiah, the commander of the fortress, in charge of Jerusalem, for he was a faithful man, and he feared God more than many. I said to them, do not let the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot, and while they are standing guard, let them shut and bolt the doors. Also appoint guards from the inhabitants of Jerusalem, each at his post and each in front of his own house. Now the city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, and the houses were not built. You may be seated. In our study last week, we came to that exciting moment where we saw that after just 52 days, that the wall of Jerusalem was complete, less than 2 months. They said it couldn't be done. The enemy had taunted them, had tried everything they could to keep them from building. But regardless, the work of the Lord kept going on. And just 9 months after Nehemiah first heard the account, before he first heard the report of what was going on in Jerusalem, just 9 months later, they could stand there and say, the wall is complete. It is finished. It is done. Rebuilding the wall, as we saw in our study last week, and the security that was there, is just the beginning. Now they had to guard what had been built. The wall was a place of safety, a place of identity. And though it was complete, though it was a great day of celebration for all those in Jerusalem, though it was a great day of joy, the enemy did not die. And the enemies of Jerusalem already were working hard, undermining the authority of Nehemiah against him, and they were already at work. And we saw that although the wall was finished, the war waged on. In fact, that is the great point that we learn in the book of Nehemiah. That it's not just about building the strong walls of protection, it's making sure that once they are built, that they remain standing. You see, the truth about these walls is they were not just built, they were rebuilt. Meaning this, that if they had fallen before, then they could fall again. And now comes a task of making sure that the labors of these people are not in vain, that the walls would remain standing lest they go back and repeat in history what had happened before. And this is the application. And I believe this is where so many believers get it so wrong and don't understand what this whole walk in Jesus is all about. You just see the day of their salvation, they see as being the apex of all things. It's the day of restoration, and yes, it is a great day of joy. But as you look at the truth of it, the Bible teaches that when we were saved, it was our birthday. It was the beginning of life, not the end of life. It was the beginning of a process by which God would change us and the work of God would go on. And the Bible teaches that we as believers are now to make sure that the walls of safety and the protection that we began with remain standing so that the work of God can continue. We have these enemies that are still alive and still working hard. We have the flesh, we have the world, we have the prince of darkness, and they are constantly working against us to make sure that these walls of safety don't remain intact. Then comes a task of maturity and guarding all that has been entrusted to us. And sadly, all too often you hear the stories of marriages and families and ministries that were once great, reduced to pile of rubble because they didn't guard what was built. You see, anything worthwhile is going to require attention. It's going to require guarding and work, your home, your marriage, but most importantly, your walk. Because it is your walk with Jesus will set the foundation for everything else. And it all requires work and attention. Nehemiah now has the task of making sure that the wall remains standing. I think of the heart of Paul the Apostle when he wrote to the Philippians. He said, do all things without grumbling and disputing so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you appear as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life so that in the day of Christ I will have reason to glory because I did not run or labor in vain. Paul was concerned that the labors of building would never come back to vanity, of simply giving all the time, so he attended the church. And this is why the remainder of Nehemiah becomes so critical for you and I as believers, because it is a lesson that is not just about warfare and labor, it's about endurance and perseverance and making sure that we stand on the foundation that was built. Warren Wiersbe made this note about Nehemiah and this point. He said, in the first half of the book, the people existed for the wall. But now the walls must exist for the people. And so we have to make sure that the wall stands. Why? Because it is God's protection. It's His means of keeping us safe. And now as we go on in chapter 7, we begin the lessons of what it will take to maintain the walls. Look with me at verse 1. He says, now when the wall was rebuilt, and I had set up the doors and the gatekeepers and the singers and the Levites were appointed, then I put Hananiah my brother and Hananiah the commander of the fortress in charge of Jerusalem, for he was a faithful man and feared God more than many. The very first thing you see here in the steps of maintaining the wall from Nehemiah is the appointment of leaders and positions as they get ready. I want to focus first on the leaders that he lays out here. Although Nehemiah had been a valiant leader, a leader who was really the example of all leaders, as you go through and you see his walk, now comes the important task that he has of passing on his leadership and sharing his leadership with others so that the working of God can continue. This is really the natural course of things. Nehemiah, the governor, would now have to share and give away responsibilities to those who would share the same heart that he had. Now comes this art and this act of delegation, the ability to delegate authority and responsibility. Theodore Roosevelt said, the best executive is the one who has enough sense to pick good men to do what he wants done, and self-restraint enough to keep from meddling with them while they do it. And Nehemiah here, he appointed two leaders who would have to give an account to him, and as he points here and you look at his calling, I want you to take note that Nehemiah here, he appointed these two men. These were his selection. There was no campaigns, there was no electioneering, there was no voting by the people, there was no vote by committee, there was no drawing straws. No, what we find here is that Nehemiah, with his own vision and his own eyes, looked about and he selected for himself two leaders. Something you might not have ever thought about, but when it comes to biblical leadership, there is no such thing as democracy. Did you understand that? When it comes to biblical leadership, there is no such thing as democracy. You will never find them voting in Scripture. In fact, I looked the word up vote the other day. I found it one time, and it was Paul, as he was giving his testimony to the days when he was Saul, and he voted to persecute the church. But democracy described is government by the people for the people. The problem is you look at democracy when you see it here is that democracy has one big major flaw. What is it? People. Sinful people. And democracy will only be as good as the people. So if the people are corrupt, the whole system goes corrupt because the strongest current always wins. And it's the widest road that is always traveled. This is exactly why when you look at our society and our culture as it developed, you see the things that have happened, the rate of abortion and illegitimate children and perilous schools and the moral standards and the injustice that often takes place, it's because the will of the people is making its way. Because it'll only ever be as good as the people. But the Bible is about God selecting leaders and godly leaders selecting other leaders because biblical government is theocracy. It means this, that you are governed by God. But God is the one who does the governing and His rule and His is the basis of all standards. And biblical leaders, and I hope every leader is here, needs to hear me on this, biblical leaders need to lead, not take votes. You need to lead in the way which God has directed your path. Oh yes, there will always be abuses, there always have been, of those who are self-willed and thought of their own interest and abused the authority that they had, but the Bible teaches the rule of God to make the choices that we do. I'm not opposed to democracy. Every time there's a vote and there's an election, I'm thrilled to be a part of it. Thrilled to be a part. Now, I don't usually find it favorable in my case. But I don't think the system can be beat because I think it's the very best that natural men can do for themselves. But that's the problem, is that natural men are only fallen men. And therefore, it should never surprise anyone how far off the path America is from the foundations that the forefathers laid. Why? Because somebody wasn't guarding the wall and that kind of leadership. People are doing their leading in their own way. Under the structure of the church, it is first and foremost the leading of God through men. And that's why the church, why in our church government we don't vote. We just pray for God to show us the right leaders whom we might appoint to lead. Nehemiah here, we see this example that he had appointed those to go to Jerusalem himself, and Nehemiah then selects other leaders that will lead with him. You see, the issue of who would lead over Jerusalem now that the wall was built was far too important to leave in the hands of the people. These had to be men whom he would trust and men whom would share his heart. I want you to take a look at the two. First of all, he says Hanani, his brother, who would become the civic leader of Jerusalem. In our modern day English, he would become the mayor. You see, Hananiah, who would become the commander of the fortress, in charge of Jerusalem's new defenses, and in our present day, that would be the chief of police. And these two people he appoints to these great tasks. And you think of Nehemiah's brother, you think, well, is this nepotism here? I mean, showing favor to his brother? When you look at the passage and you see the story of Hanani, we know a little bit about him because we saw him in chapter 1. It was Hanani, if you remember, who came to Nehemiah as he was in Persia with the king, and he brought him the report of what was going on in Jerusalem. Why? Because he cared about what was going on. I believe with all of my heart that this wasn't a matter of simply setting someone up for the safe, for the place of privilege, and so that they can live high on a hog in their great position. I believe the reason that Nehemiah chose his brother Hanani was because he was the man who most shared his heart for what he had for these people. He knew him, he understood him, and I believe that Hanani might have been with him on that journey, but these men whom Nehemiah picked were men who had like mind, who shared his vision. Remember last week in our study, we saw the undermining that was taking place? What was the reason for the undermining? Is because these men did not share the vision nor the heart of the leader. And that's when you saw the great danger. They didn't share. They were of a different mind. No, what Nehemiah needed so much is he needed men that would lead, who were loyal and trustworthy. Look at the qualifications that he gives us in verse 2 here. For he was a faithful man and he feared God more than many. You see, Nehemiah's own example back in chapter 5 when he was talking about the fact that he hadn't abused the people as other governors had before him, nor he had taken advantage of them. He said, I did not because of the fear of the Lord. What you see here is that when Nehemiah went to select leaders, he selected them to be just like himself, those who feared the Lord. These men were known for their faithfulness, men that feared God more than others. They were not selected because of their wealth or their titles or because of their politics. They were not chosen because they were great businessmen. No, what they were done was they were chosen by the criteria by which Nehemiah knew was important to himself. They feared the Lord. To fear the Lord, I want you to think about that with me for a minute. It means this, that they were men who cared most about what God thought, much more than what man thought. They were governed by God. What fear of the Lord is, people, when you look at this, it means having a healthy desire to honor and please God above everything else. And a healthy fear of doing your own thing, lest you bring dishonor to the Lord. In other words, these guys who fear the Lord wanted God and His will more than anything else in all the world. They feared Him. They prayed that His name would be honored. And all that they did, he says, they were faithful, they were loyal. The commitment to God came first. Now what Nehemiah does when he chooses leaders, he chooses God-fearing leaders. Faithful, dependable men who share his vision and his heart. And how sad it is when leaders fear people instead of fearing God. When they test the wind and find out where it's blowing, where they use public opinion to set out where their course is going to be. An unsafe place for walls to stand. When leaders don't fear the Lord. A leader pleasing to God is a God pleaser, not a man pleaser. I think of Peter when he drew that line in the sand as far as his own leadership, speaking to the other apostles, he said this, we must obey God rather than men. Feared the Lord. Fearing God means that you care most what God thinks over what man thinks. Seeking to honor Him in all things. So the very first step that Nehemiah does to preserve these walls is to appoint God-fearing leaders. And secondly, you see that he set men in their positions. As you go through this few verses here, you realize that there's four specific groups of positions that we find in these verses. First of all, there's gatekeepers, those who keep watch of the gate that were built. You find there are singers, those who would keep the song sung to keep the song alive. We're going to discuss that in a later chapter. You see here we have Levites, those who would maintain the religious duties of the city. And then in verse 3 you see the position of guards, those who would guard not just the gates, but would guard their own homes. Now for our study this morning, I want us to take a good look at the gatekeepers and the guards, because I think they're associated with the leaders here, those who keep watch of the gate, those who open and close the gates, those who guard and discern all who enter and all who leave. Verse 4 tells us that while these walls were yet complete, there was still much work to be done. Look at this verse 4. The city was large, the people were few, there were many homes to build. Within the city, there was still much work to be done. And the work could only be done as the walls would keep the people safe, because what in the world was the point in building homes if the walls were down? So the work could be done, he appointed gatekeepers and guards. And Nehemiah's command was this in verse 3, do not let the gates of Jerusalem be opened until the sun is hot. And while they are standing guard, let them shut the bolt, the doors. Also appoint guards from the inhabitants of Jerusalem, each at his post and each in front of his own home. Nehemiah is saying this, never open the gates before the people are awake and alert. Always make sure when those gates are open that there are people that are alert, watching what goes on at the gates. And shut the gates before darkness to keep unwanted guests from slipping in unnoticed. Never be without someone to guard and to watch the walls. Because what good are strong new gates if nobody is guarding them and controlling all who enter and all who leave? And what good are walls if the gates are open and every foe might be able to make their way in? No, these guards here were to be at each post, each guarding his own house. Boy, there's so much can be said about that. But there would be no let up of watching. You see, without the gatekeepers and the guards, the enemies would come in and wreak havoc upon the people. I was thinking about this as I was going through my study. I thought how applicable this is when you really look at the establishment of the church, isn't it? Think with me, I can't help but see the correlation here. With the setting up of the Church of Jesus Christ, how Jesus laid the foundation through His own blood for the house that was to be built, that He Himself was the foundation of safety and protection, and then came the gospel, which became the walls that would establish the church in the confines of security and peace. And what did Jesus do? He appointed leaders. He chose these 12 men whom He appointed. These leaders to make sure that the foundation stood strong. Because without the foundation, the house would surely fall. These wise men, Jesus said, is the man who builds his house upon the rock. And the disciples were appointed by Jesus. They were hand-selected by Him because He knew exactly what He was looking for. And Jesus made sure the disciples understood. He said in John 15, He said, "You did not choose Me, but I chose you. That you would go and bear fruit, and that your fruit would remain, so that whatever you ask of the Father in My name, He may give to you." No, Jesus went and He hand-selected those guys. They wouldn't have been the guys of My choice. But He chose them. Because He knew what He was going to do, and when He knew the work that He was going to do. But to a man, with the exception of one, as you look at the characteristics of all these apostles, you get the sense that every single one of them feared the Lord. That they honored God. Oh, they had weaknesses in their life. But these were men who Jesus chose because He was going to leave the keys to the car with them. Here, guys. I believe it's a good thing that the disciples were not selected by vote. I don't believe that any of them perhaps would have been voted on, with the possible exception of only one by the name of Judas Iscariot. But Jesus knew exactly what He was looking for. And He selected accordingly. He was looking for weakness to establish His greatness. Men who would be a demonstration throughout all the world that this is a God who does things in weakness. And the apostles were the first ones called to maintain the house that Jesus built. This was Paul's counsel to the elders and deacons, as you give the deacons and the qualifications that are given. And Timothy and Titus, these are men who are called to guard the wall, to make sure that they were faithful and loyal, men who guarded their own homes. Part of the qualifications that you find in the book of Timothy and of Titus for pastors and leaders and elders is that they guard their own homes as well as the wall. These leaders were given to the church so that the work of the church could go on. Paul said this in Ephesians. He says, therefore, when he ascended on high, he led captive a host of captives and gave gift to men. And he gave some as apostles, some as prophets, some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers for the equipping of saints, for the work of service, for the building up of the body of Christ, until we all attain unity in faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure and stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. He says, as a result, we are no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, and by the craftiness and deceit scheming. Jesus said these leaders were to be a safety for you. Not only are they building the church, they're protecting the church. Not only are they doing that, Jesus gave these leaders. They were given as a gift. Listen, the greatest gift that the church could ever have is to have men in leadership who fear God. That is truly what every pastor, every elder, every deacon, every church leader ought to be the qualification by which you lead, a builder, because you're just a builder and a keeper. Gatekeepers, those who make sure the foundations and walls remain strong. Men and women who are faithful and dependable and trustworthy to guard the church, trustworthy men. It is said that in the Great Wall of China was penetrated by the enemy at least 4 times. And each time the guards were bribed. Gates and walls are only good as the people who guard them. When you look at in the book of Acts, when they're selecting deacons in Acts chapter 3 or chapter 6, they gave these qualifications. Therefore, brethren, select from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, who we may put in charge of this task. Paul would say to Timothy, he said this, he said, the things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, and trust these to faithful men who are able to teach others. There was never to be a vote. There was only one criteria, these men who are faithful. These men who would fear the Lord and trusted to give others that the work of God might be protected and kept safe. This is the role of biblical church leaders, here to serve you and to protect you. And what a tragedy it is when church leaders are selected for other reasons than what the Bible gives. How many churches appoint or select leaders and choose leaders because of their wealth and perhaps their position that they have or their status? How many are selected by vote because of their popularity, because they happen to be the best known in the church? How many are selected or chosen because of what they give instead of how they give? And how many leaders are living and trying to live in the penthouse when it really means serving and living in servants' quarters? And meanwhile, the church goes unprotected and the work doesn't go on. And meanwhile, the church suffers from false teachers and these wolves that are coming in sheep's clothing. Why? Because there is no gatekeepers. You see, if God's people don't protect what they have accomplished for the Lord, then the enemy will come in at the most vulnerable moments. I think back to the days that our church was beginning. I had felt the call of the Lord in my own life to pastor. Most of you know, for a number of years, actually since I was little, I had a hard time seeing myself in that position. I had a hard time. I mean, I knew what I grew up like. I knew the person. So I had a hard time seeing myself in that position. So it was 33 years old when I finally had gone through school and got set and prepared myself to the best of my ability and really feeling led of the Lord to do it, to get ready to pastor. And so we began a little Bible study that within a matter of months became a church. As I look back and I think about the beginning of those days, I'm really glad that they didn't take a vote. Because I'm certain that probably had they taken a vote, they wouldn't have voted for me. And in some ways they did, because they kept coming back, which I was amazed. They hung in there, and I felt insecure enough, and I had watched many of my friends who had gone through school with me send out resume after resume for the church that was looking for the perfect pastor, and some of them were looking for someone who they could lead, not lead them. And all I knew for certain is that God had called me to this thing, and I'm very thankful that we could just start from scratch, because I wasn't sure that anybody would ever have chosen me. All I knew is I felt called, and throughout the years it was verified by others and different things that had happened in my life. We had no support from a denomination, and we were those hard days. I was finishing school, my last semester when the church started, and working part-time. I had three children. Didn't know what was going to happen. But it seemed like God was laying a foundation and something was happening. I have to tell you that those days were filled with a lot of insecurity. I wasn't always sure whether the walls were going to remain standing. I felt like something was being built, and surely the proof would be if it was standing in a matter of time. We prayed and we lifted up to the Lord. And those early days, I was doing everything myself. I was the chief cook and bottle washer, and I did the bulletin. I led the worship and did the janitorial work and counseled and taught. And I was going through all this, and the church was getting established. In the early days of a church, and people are coming to a church, you don't really know why they're coming. Some come for different reasons. Some start with a church because they're convinced that if they get on the ground floor, later on they'll be at the penthouse. Some come to check it out. Oh, they liked it. They said, well, listen, when the work is done, we'll come back. After the structure is set up and the things set up in the church and you're finally established, then we'll be back. Others came because the Lord sent them. They came here to labor and to serve, and we saw how the Lord continued to bless. But after a couple years, I awakened to the fact of how important it was for me to have, as the number one issue for me was to have good leaders with me. Was to have men who qualified, who should share the burden with me, who would pray with me and work with me and love with me and cry with me. And love me and love the Lord. And selecting the right people to guard what was being built. Men who had all the qualifications that we saw in Scripture. Men who, first of all, and I knew with all my heart, is I wanted men next to me that really feared God. I looked for the ones who were sent, grateful to them. By the way, I want to say to those of you who share with me in leadership today, elders and deacons and other leaders, I want to tell you how grateful I am to you. Some of you, maybe if you were to be voted on, might not ever be where you are. I always know that those who serve with me love me. I feel like I'm a loved man. But better yet, I know they love the Lord first, more than they love me. And because they love the Lord first, it leaves me feeling like the walls of this church are very safe and protected because they fear God. I feel our church is safe because the gates are up and these men fear the Lord. And the very first thing we find Nehemiah here did was he appointed God-fearing leaders, gatekeepers and guards. God gives leaders as a blessing to the church to protect her, to keep her safe and to make sure that it stays in the right path. But I want to give you an application, you husbands and you fathers, you wives and you mothers. God has appointed you to be the gatekeepers of your family and to watch over them. And the greatest way to keep their walls and your family safe is if you first of all fear God. That you love those who you lead, but better that you love God first. And you consider where He wants to take your family and what He wants to do with them. Because in this, God will protect your family and He will protect your marriage if you keep Him first and you fear His name. And I see it all the time as in counseling and in the situations of people who didn't keep the Lord first. And because of it, they come in and they see their homes are in rubble. You elders, you deacons, you gatekeepers, been appointed to watch and to guard the wall, lest the enemy make his way in while no one is looking. I challenge you to keep watching day and night, watch and see what God would do and use you that you might fear Him. I ask the Lord, give me, God, the kind of love for the people in our fellowship that I love you first. That I would always consider what God wants before what you want. And Paul said as he spoke to those Ephesian elders in Acts 20. And he gave them this exhortation. He said, be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which He purchased with His blood. I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock, and from among your own selves will arise men speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after themselves. Therefore, he said, be on the alert. Remembering that night and day for a period of 3 years, I did not cease to admonish each one of you. Paul is saying, I wanted to make sure that what began would continue. And it began with fearing God and guarding those whom the Lord has given you charge over. Now the very first step we find here in chapter 7 in preserving the wall was to establish the right kind of leadership. Nehemiah would multiply his leadership, and because he multiplied his leadership, more work could be done. To keep the walls, they had to fear the Lord. But the church is going to be kept safe, elders and deacons, and leaders of the church. It'll be because you place God first in your life. Because more than any other thing in the world, you consider what He thinks. And if I should depart from the Lord, that you would step up to the plate and say, we're going to make sure that God's way takes place here. And Sunday school teachers and workers, I want you to hear this. You want to guard what's been built? Fear God. Put Him first. You servants, the first responsibility you have is to fear the Lord first and foremost, setting Him above everything. Last of all, to all of you, I would challenge you, pray for the gatekeepers. How the enemy works hard. We've seen it in our study, how Nehemiah himself became the focus of the enemy, because if they could get the shepherd, they could get the sheep. Ephesians 6, as Paul said, with all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit. And with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints. And pray in my behalf, that utterance may be given to me in opening my mouth to make known the boldness, the mystery of the gospel. Because when you pray for those who lead you, you're praying for your own safety and for your own security. It all begins with fearing the Lord. Do you fear the Lord? What place does He rank in your priority list? Of the things that you consider each day and each morning, what's the very first thing you're concerned about? You'll know how you fear the Lord. By the priorities you keep. Are you faithful to Him? Or is it other things that always come before Him? Are you faithful to keep Him first? And if not, the strength of your marriage and your house is in jeopardy. And if not, I believe that this church and the future of our church is questionable. And if not, it should never surprise any of us to wake up one day and find us in a big pile of rubble. Because the first step in preserving what God builds is to fear the Lord. It means you know Him. You say, I care more about what He thinks more than what anyone else thinks. And when you do, it's the first step of making sure that those walls that were built never come down again. Hope you heard. I think the Lord had a message here. He's saying, put me first. Fear me. And then you'll be saved. Let's pray.